This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 2. Hit the chalk. Up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about Yorkers and hitting out at the death and how things have changed. We think about bowling workload and prehab, and we talk about Mitchell Johnson and how things have changed for him. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to cricket coaching, playing cricket, and generally getting extremely good at one of those two or both of those things. And I am David Hinchliffe. I'm going to be helping you in this guide to better cricket and helping me to help you, of course, every week. Alongside me, it's Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, Mark Garraway. Welcome, Garris.
Hello, fella. You all right?
Yes, I'm very good. But let's talk about cricket. And there's some stuff going on around the world, as always. And one of the things that I've noticed is the one-day series, the much maligned, I think, one-day series that follows on from the Ashes between Australia and England. But there's been some interesting stuff going on this week around the last 7 days or so around Yorkers. And I know this week you've written an article to do with Yorkers, and I thought we could talk a little bit about that. The last few overs of a one-day game is one that's changed a lot in recent years. And bowling Yorkers, a lot of people are saying that the way to succeed in those last few overs is to bowl Yorkers, because that's one of the hardest balls to hit. But yet, a criticism of England's bowlers is that they didn't bowl enough Yorkers and they let a brilliant innings lose the game for them. So let's start with talking about Yorkers in general. Where do you see the idea that bowling Yorkers at the death is the thing to do, and how do you view the criticism of the England bowlers that they couldn't do it?
Well, it's obviously an important part of it, but you can't just rely on Yorkers. And actually the best exponents of the Yorkers at the end, and obviously Malinga statistically bowls more than anybody else and has a better success rate of anybody else, particularly in 20 over cricket, also in 50 over cricket, but especially in 20 over cricket, through the stat stuff that we've been able to do. You know, it's important that you can be able to do it, and I think England did try and bowl some the other night but just didn't execute ultimately. But it's not just, you can't run up and just bowl six Yorkers. Even the great Malinga, who's probably been the best at it in the modern era, doesn't just do that, because obviously batters have come up with different options, and we saw one example of that is that if you miss your length, miss that Yorker length, then James Faulkner was incredibly good at hammering it over mid-on and mid-wicket, which we've seen for a number of years. You've got the Joss Butlers of this world and many others that are now flipping the ball really well. There was a really good example of one in the Glenn Maxwell, hit one over the top of short third man, playing a sort of Joss Butler type shot. So there are plenty of options. But yeah, as I say, I don't think it was through lack of trying that that England failed to execute it.
If you have a guy who does attempt to bowl, say, five Yorkers over the death period, and they hit three of them, that's pretty good going, isn't it?
It is great going, but in a match context, they miss two and go out the park twice. They've gone for 12 and over, a minimum, you know, which isn't necessarily, you know, seen as good. So it's such a delicate thing. And my point in the article that I wrote, and there was loads of people offering technical advice about what somebody should be doing or what somebody shouldn't be doing. And the bottom line is these guys practice it day in, day out. You know, it's hugely relevant part of 2020 cricket and 50 over cricket. And you've only got to watch any professional unit and even club level units. And you practice it heaps. My question is, do we ever practice it, or do we practice it enough under extreme pressure? Because as I stated in my article, Ben Stokes bowled three Yorkers in the 43rd over when the game was dead, yet couldn't replicate that when the pressure was really on, when you know, they were 20 runs out with three overs to go and Faulkner going at great guns. And that's and that's a challenge. And in the article, I offered three options, and I'm sure there's some other ones, of how you can load a practice, how you can put a bowler into that state of anxiety, pressure, awkwardness, uncomfortableness. But ultimately, if they can come through and find a solution in those situations, then you're better preparing them to be able to deliver a Yorker than just merely bowling at a cone in an open practice when there's nobody watching and you haven't got millions on telly looking at you.
Yeah, I guess once you've got the technique down and you know the feel of bowling a Yorker, then it's a matter of putting yourself as close to a game situation as you can then and seeing how that changes the way that you bowl. And then once you've got access to that information, then you're going to be a lot better off than if you never practice in that way. So the more creative you can get in that area, the better. And you've come up with some great examples in the article this week, which I suggest that all bowlers and all coaches of bowlers take a look at, because there's some cracking ideas in there. But let's talk about Faulkner as well, because you can't really completely talk about the England bowlers not hitting the right area and all the rest of it and completely ignore the fact that somebody stayed very calm out in the middle and almost cruised to victory when the game was lost. How do you view that innings in terms of the great one-day innings, the great one-day finishing innings?
Well, it's up there. And not wholly unexpected, I don't think, as well, because he had a superb tour to India where he scored his first ODI 100, not quite in such extreme situational circumstances as that, but it demonstrated a lot of the hitting and that calmness of thinking that he demonstrated the other day. And in fact, I was in a meeting with the ECB reviewing level four and putting together some plans for the next few years of level four, and we actually stopped the meeting to watch it. And the reason why we stopped it was because the game was dead and buried, apart from the fact that James Faulkner was batting. I said at the time to one of my colleagues that this could be really interesting because this guy's done this before. So it wasn't as if it was out of the blue, because he's been in similar situations or played in extremely calm way in tight situations before and come out on top. So the only way England were going to win that game from quite a long way out, in my view, was if we bowled Australia out.
Of course, we have on the Pitch Vision Academy website courses from the guy who started all this finishing business, Michael Bevan, or certainly the guy who is considered to be one of the greats when it comes to closing out a game. And he had some fascinating things to say about your mental approach in those kind of high pressure situations and the way that you keep it absolutely as simple as possible and focusing completely on the task and doing as much as you can to put all the stressful stuff out of your head, because it's not doing any good in your head. All you need to do is focus on the task, and he had some great ways of doing that, which I urge anyone who plays in that limited over form of cricket to have a look at that, because it really is a fascinating insight into the mind of someone who really knew how to finish a game. In fact, we call the course Finisher. So really interesting stuff. Do you think that is a thing that you can learn and you can develop over time, or is it something which some people are just always naturally going to be better at than others?
I think certain people have got a capacity for it in their character that lends itself to that situation, and therefore any experience they have on top of that is only going to galvanise that potential to stay calm under pressure. Even at the level I'm coaching at the moment, we've got one guy in our first team that does it on a regular basis, and it's very much reflective of his character. He's not particularly easy to get overly excited about things, and equally he doesn't get overly put off by situations. And in the last couple of years, he's come out with some innings that others wouldn't be able to do purely because of his characteristics and his character and personality. However, I do think by putting people into different situations, and I talked about when I was coaching Somerset and we chased down what was then a really big score in one-day cricket in a 45-over game, chased 275 under floodlights in bowler heavy conditions, and Ian Blackwell, who was part of the reason why we won that game alongside a couple of others, Wes Durston and John Francis, who both played really well. Ian Blackwell came in and he said, well, that was easy because we've done that over and over and over again in our practice. And if you set up practices, you can develop people's ability to look at things differently and to get used to being successful in adverse situations. But ultimately, there are characters that do that more naturally, and you don't have to work on it quite so much. So it is something you can develop, but in some, it's galvanizing on what they've already got. And just listening to the way that James Faulkner spoke after his innings, you know, he said that inside he was all sorts of nerves and jangles and all sorts of things going on, but he was able to convey a calm. And that must have been useful to the people that were at the other end when they came from 7 wickets down to win that game. And in particular, in that last wicket partnership, which was, you know, 55 and still going, to be the batter at the other end and to see this very calm figure going about his business must have been incredibly inspirational and confidence building.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic stuff. Especially, I guess, if you're an Australia fan, not so much if you're an England fan, but you've got to take your hat off whatever colours that you have the hat. Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And Bernus is not here this week, so I'll be in charge of the questions. Gareth, if you want to answer first. And remember, you can't say anything else apart from yes or no. First question. The worst vice is advice.
No.
Yes. Second question. It's better to blood youngsters in important matches.
Yes.
No. Third question. Batsmen are better fielders than bowlers.
No.
Yes. Okay, so it's time for the questions section. Of course, every week we have a couple of questions, and those questions are of a coaching bent, and hopefully we can answer them. But even more beneficial to the person who is getting their question answered is that we give away a prize, and that is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And of course, those courses are things like what we talked about earlier with Michael Bevan, where you can get videos, you can download worksheets, you can take things to nets, you can look at drills, and you can do all kinds of fun stuff to improve your game. And that's all available, of course, at pitchvision.com/academy. And if you want to send in your question to us, you can do so by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll give you some more information about sending your questions in towards the end of the show. But let's go for the first question this week, and it's from Michael. And Michael says, I'm 15 years old and I play cricket for my local club. I love sport and I play tennis too. I have tennis on Tuesdays and Saturdays, and I have cricket training on Thursdays and Sundays, all day, in fact, because he has juniors in the morning and seniors in the afternoon. So his workload is pretty tough. I'm an all-rounder. I bat and bowl pace too, and I often get shoulder and lower back injuries. And when I bowl, it's painful. I do strength and conditioning work on my arms and core every day, but the pain still occurs. I'm wondering how I can prevent the pain. Should I lessen my workload, or do I need to change my bowling action? Thanks heaps. Well, Michael, hopefully we can help you get to the bottom of this. Gareth, what's your initial thoughts?
Oh, crikey. I mean, what a question, and great detail about what you're doing throughout the week, Michael, which gives us an opportunity to get into some good detail on this. I mean, the first thing is, do you need to change your bowling action? Really difficult for us to say without having seen it and without having worked with you. So I'm going to put that to one side at the moment and say possibly, and it would be worth seeking out some advice from somebody close to you who you respect or you know is a good fast bowling coach to have a look at that aspect of it. So in my view, I'm not going to touch that now because we've got enough in the rest of the question to be able to work on. And it's fantastic that you're that active. But one of the things that's really important, particularly at the age of 15, is workload. And it's been really interesting to watch the Australian team and their fast bowlers over the course of the last year, where there were a lot of injuries in England. And then obviously the same side played throughout the test series in Australia. And the physio Alex, who works with the Australian team, was asked at the end of each series What were the reasons for A, the injuries in England, and B, why everybody stayed on the park? And there were two things that came out of both of those interviews. First one was workload. And for example, Peter Siddall in England was being asked to bowl heck of a lot of overs, which obviously then has a cumulative effect as he goes through the weeks and into different matches. So if you can manage your workloads, that's really important for somebody of Peter Siddall's age, let alone for somebody who's 15, whose skeleton is likely to be changing a regular basis as it lengthens and develops. So I'd be really wary of your workloads, not just in terms of your bowling, but also in terms of your practice, your intensity of practice. And in England, we do a thing which is in every 7 day period, you should bowl no more than four times and never any more than 2 days on the trot. So if you could apply some of that into your programming, that would probably be useful. And I should imagine you'll find that you'll be spreading your bowling over the course of a week and maybe reducing your volume and hopefully having a positive impact on your bowling and in particular your bowling health, which is very, very important. The second thing that came out of Alex's findings in the research that he's been doing is actually the skeleton is much more robust and can resist workload and the strains and stresses of bowling post the age of 25. And if you look at the three bowlers that went through the series against England recently in the Ashes out in Australia, two things were big on that really is the age of all three bowlers was over 25, and in Mitchell Johnson's case 32. So his skeleton was very robust and rigorous and could withstand any workload. And the second thing is they were bowling England out fairly easily and fairly quickly, which gave the bowlers quite significant gaps in their bowling to be able to come out and reproduce and reproduce and reproduce in a healthy fashion. So workload number one, monitor what you do. Have a little look at the 7-4-2 principle. So 7 day period, bowl no more than four times and no more than 2 days on the trot. Okay, and that's both in practice and also in your matches. We also look at a 30 over, maximum of 30 overs, and never repeating 30 overs week on week because that increases your workload. So have a look at that. And the second thing is be patient because your skeleton, according to a specialist that I very much respect, who's done a heck of a lot of research into it, says you've got 10 years to go before your skeleton is going to be rigorously and robust enough to be able to deal with significant workload. And even then, it's important to have gaps in between your bowling. So, well done. Have a look at your workload and come back to us.
The thing that I would like to focus on, Gareth, because your answer was fantastic, is the strength conditioning stuff, which he mentioned, and he doesn't go into any detail other than he does work on his arms and his core every day. But that tells me something. If he's doing something every day, then you're definitely not giving yourself time to recover properly, especially if you're in the middle of a busy season. You're training hard, you're playing matches, and then you're also doing any kind of extra strength conditioning work. Then that is going to put a toll, an extra toll on your body. Even if you're doing stuff which is more towards performance than, say, traditional exercises. We've talked about, say, sit-ups in the past, where we're not so keen on the sit-up because it's putting a lot of strain on the lower back, which when you're bowling, there's probably a lot of strain on the lower back on top. So that's a lot of strain, especially if you're doing something every day. So, for example, we don't know in Michael's case if he's doing sit-ups or not, but let's say he is doing sit-ups. That's probably something that you want to stop doing, probably altogether, and definitely not every day. So the first thing I'd look at is the amount of strength conditioning stuff that you're doing, and cut that back, especially during the season. You know, you can probably cut that back two or three times a week and just look at maintaining what you've already got rather than trying to make rather than trying to make improvements. And then secondly, to look at what you're doing because, as I said, sit-ups are perhaps not the best choice when you can be doing other types of core work that would be more beneficial to strengthen up your core, including your lower back and your glutes and that kind of area that needs to be strong and mobile and all the rest of it. So you probably look at the types of exercises that you're doing as well. And there's stuff on Pitch Vision Academy training for fast bowlers and the types of exercises that you might want to be looking at doing ahead of other types of exercises, especially around the shoulder, because there's a lot of exercises for the shoulder, traditional exercises for the shoulder, that come from a bodybuilding background. The idea being, of course, you're trying to make your muscles bigger because, you know, you want to look good on the stage for bodybuilding. But that isn't necessarily the best for the function of the shoulder when you're bowling or throwing. So you might want to have a look at the type of exercise that you're doing for your shoulder as well. And maybe lean towards the more preventative type exercises, or prehabilitation, sometimes that called, rather than the, say, bodybuilding style exercises like the lateral raises or the military press with a barbell and things like that. So take a look at that as well. Okay, Gareth, I wanted to ask you a little bit about bowling action. I know that there's no way that we can possibly help Michael specifically, but you don't have to extrapolate too far to realise that there's a lot going on with twisting and bending that can cause problems. So, you know, you have to have a look at that and try and minimise the effect of that as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, the main cause of back injuries, particularly non-bowling side back injuries, which is what you get generally in fast bowling, comes from side flexion. So side flexion is effectively the position of your spine at point of release. And if it's really curved, then you're more likely to incur a right arm bowl or a low left pain in your back. So often the reason why you're in that position comes from your alignment in your bound and where all your forces are going, and then the compensation that you make in your delivery stride and then into your front foot to get the ball back online. And obviously the smoother and more aligned that all of those forces are, from bound into back foot, into front foot and then into follow through, that the less likely you are to get into a position of side flexion.
Well, hopefully that helps you, Michael. And if you have any follow-up to that, then please get back in touch with us, because we always like to know what effect that our advice has on people and what piece they picked up and ran with. Let's go to the next question. It's from our old friend Cups. Haven't heard from Cups for a while, but it's a great question. So Cups says, after Mitchell Johnson's incredible comeback to Test cricket, I've been wondering what he's done to get himself into good shape and bowl with such brilliant rhythm. Now, obviously, we're watching from afar here, Gareth, but what have you noticed about Mitchell Johnson?
Well, you know, he's always been able to do what he's done. He's had peaks. You only have to look at his rating on the ICC bowling, order rankings to know that what he's done in this Ashes series has been achieved before. He's done it over short periods of time and then sort of dropped off the face of the earth. And anybody that's followed some of the news stories that have been associated with his rise and his present performance will realise that, he has gone through those dips and those troughs. And in terms of what he's done physically, I've got no idea what he's done, because looking in and watching him prepare as when I was involved with England and seeing him around, he's always looked a fantastic physical specimen. So I'm in no position to say what he has or hasn't been doing that may or may not be different. I think a lot of it has come down to perspective with Mitchell. He's obviously been somebody that's caught quite a lot of grief from fans. And is somebody that probably internalises quite a lot and asks himself a lot of questions. Certainly his interviews over the course of this series have indicated that that's what he's done in the past. So, I think it's more mental. And one of the things that often happens with players is when they have a family and they go from thinking purely about themselves to having a little child that they have to think about. And however bad your day is, and he's actually said this himself, however bad your day is, you go back home and your little one looks you in the eye, gives you a smile and wants to play on the floor or whatever the cat wants a story, and all of a sudden the world's a different place. So I think perspective has been good for him. The other thing that he did is that he engaged a lot with some high level armed forces, people with experience of massive amounts of conflict, and also the training types that they do. And again, that gave him perspective to be working along people that a bad day in conflict often is about somebody losing their lives, as opposed to maybe having bad bowling figures at the end of it. And again, he's been very reflective in the last few months and talked a lot about those experiences that he had with Victoria Cross winners and having a different look on life and a different look on performance than maybe he'd have had 4 or 5 years ago. So I don't think it's anything specifically fitness-wise that's made a difference to it. I just think that he's a more mature bloke that's able to deal with the trials and tribulations of test cricket, because that's exactly what it is, emotionally, physically, cognitively, than he was 4 or 5 years ago. And I'm fascinated to see how long he can sit on the top of this wave, because historically, without that perspective, he's gone up and down like a yo-yo, and you know, and his strike rates have been incredible for periods of time in the past. But for some reason, I'm beginning to think that maybe there's a bit more to this guy, and he's had more experiences and he's got more perspective. It will help him stay on that way for a bit longer this time around.
Keith Miller it was, wasn't it, who another Australian fast bowler, Keith Miller, who in World War II flew aircraft in World War II, said about pressure. He said that when he was asked about pressure in cricket, he said, pressure is a Messerschmitt up your ass. Playing cricket is not.
and that's a fantastic example of somebody who's got some perspective. And I think that's what Mitchell's got through his life, you know, with having a family and the maturity that instantly comes. You know, one day you're yourself and the next day all of a sudden you're holding this baby. And for those that have been through it, probably understand exactly what I'm saying, and you've got completely different responsibilities and a view on the world, and that's from one day where that baby isn't there to the next day that it is. And he's worked a lot with a guy called Corporal Ben Robert Smith, who has been in the papers and been on telly quite a lot, who's got the Victoria Cross, SAS soldier, took him out and did some training with him, but only on a couple of days. It wasn't as if he trained for him for months. Did some training with him, talked about the experiences, got other people that have been through the SAS and been into conflict and suffered loss and all of those things. And Mitchell has talked a lot about that experience. And I think it's really important that that test players get a perspective, because it's tough. You know, you have more bad days than good ones in the main. And when you are on it, you've got to go with it and enjoy it. But equally, when you're not, you've got to have that perspective that gives you the opportunity to bounce back. And he hasn't had that in the past. And I'm fascinated, because I believe that he probably has now. And at the age of 32, which, you know, isn't young, I honestly believe that he's in a great place to continue for a few years. And good luck to South Africa facing him in the upcoming series.
Yeah, left arm fast bowler causing all kinds of damage on those quick tracks is always going to be a problem. I guess it goes back to one of the themes of this show and one of the themes of Pitch Vision Academy, which really is that if the more that you understand yourself and the more that you're comfortable with the way that you are and not trying to be somebody else or trying to fit into a shape that you don't fit into, the more you can understand your own way of doing things and your own approach to things, the better you're going to be, because that's, you know, it's very quick and easy to say, be yourself, understand yourself, but it's a long journey to embark on. And I think Mitchell Johnson is a lot closer to that now than he was 12 months ago or 2 years ago. It's the soapbox. It's 60 seconds. It's uninterrupted. Mark Garraway. Garraz, over to you. Your time starts now.
I'm going to talk about a quote that actually I use as part of my philosophy of coaching. And people often say, what is talent and how do we develop it? And talent to me is potential minus interference. And people often ask me, you know, what is interference? Well, interference can be huge amounts of things. And you've got your self-interference, I suppose your cognitive interference, that comes along, the doubts that creep into your head. Or maybe, you know, as I experienced a few times, I'd be getting to 50 and all of a sudden my mind would then go towards getting 100 instead of thinking, you know, about what I needed to do to get that 100. So all of a sudden I had cognitive interference going on, and as a result my performance and my talent didn't come through. Equally, it could be interference from a coach, and we talk a lot about players being referred to and spoke to in the way that they want to receive rather than the way that the the coach wants to give it. And I look back on my own career and think, how many times have I actually been an interference rather than a facilitator for them reaching their potential? And I think we should all look at ourselves like that. So I like the quote, performance, or if you want to supplement it with talent, equals potential minus interference. Have a look at your own coaching. Have a look at the way that players are talking to themselves or conducting themselves. And if you work within that and try to limit the interference, often you'll see the performance go through the roof.
Fantastic. And I'm even going to let you off going over your minute there, Gareth, because you tried to tackle a huge topic in 60 seconds, and that is impressive.
Was I much over?
Yeah, about 30 seconds.
Oh, you're joking. Oh, my God. Sorry, I apologise hugely.
That's all right. I'll just edit out some of your earlier stuff. And that is the end of the show for another week. We have covered a huge range of topics as we normally do, and hopefully we've got some good information in there for everybody listening. But let's talk about the two people who sent in their questions, Gareth. Of course, we need to decide on the winner of this week's prize, which is the online coaching course and videos over at Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Michael's question about how much bowling he's doing and how much work he's doing, and we had Cups's question about Mitchell Johnson. So which one did you prefer this week?
Well, two brilliant questions. Cups's one is very relevant in the current climate, where Australia, and in particular Mitchell Johnson, have gone really well. And the other one from Michael was about him, which I always enjoy questions about yourselves, because we've got an opportunity to try and help you, and hopefully we do more often than not. This week I'm going to go for Michael's, because he gave us some really good detail in there that allowed us to get into workloads and patience as well, how he can mould his training programmes along some different models to see if he can get some different results, i.e. not having a painful back. So Michael is this week's winner.
Congratulations, Michael. Get in touch with us. We'll give you your online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they thought to themselves, yep, I want to get some of that action, how would they get in touch with us, send in their question, and have their chance to win that prize?
Well, they can give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. We also have international numbers on the website. You can get us through Twitter at PitchVisionAcad. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. And all those ways of getting in touch with us, we monitor carefully. We can't answer every question, but we can look at everyone. And if you do want your question read out, you can send it in any number of ways, and we'll get back in touch with you if we need to. Now, if you want to subscribe to this show, and I think you should because it's brilliant, then you can go to iTunes. You can do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you can click on the subscribe button. And, you'll get it every week without having to check back. Now, if you don't want to use iTunes, then you can use any other podcasting program. If you just head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll get all the instructions for subscribing in any podcatcher that you want. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.